It's the Confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Governor Josh Shapiro's budget proposal announced last week includes $500 million over 5 years to improve mental health services in schools, an additional $20 million this coming year in increased funding for county mental health services. Aaron Dalton is the director of Allegheny County's Department of Human Services and joins us now. Aaron, welcome back to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Should the governor's budget be approved, this $20 million would be the first state funding increase in county mental health services in more than a decade. Do you have a sense at this point, if the $20 million is approved, how much Allegheny County could receive from that amount?
Yeah, we expect that we're about 10% of the population, and if the state distributes the funding as they typically do by population, we would receive about 10% of that, or $2 million. Mm-hmm.
In 2013, the state reduced by 10% under Governor Tom Corbett what it pays for mental health and other human services. So some have suggested this budget is just restoring the funding the counties lost or counties should be able to rely on. Do you agree? What's your take on that assessment?
Yeah, that's our understanding as well. The base funding was cut way back then, and really we're just starting to make up for that. And in fact, I think given inflation and other costs, we think this is really only a third of that reinstatement, and so not even getting us back to where we were back then. So there's a lot more room to go.
Mm-hmm. Starting to make up for it, in what sense did you have to, over the years, have to cut services, pinch pennies? What did you have to do to make up for it?
Yeah, these are dollars that are really important, as you note and the governor notes. These are funding we use in schools for things that Medicaid can't pay for, things like housing. So we have to spend our base funds to help the uninsured and to help pay for housing costs and other ancillary costs that the Medicaid funds don't cover. So yes, those are things that we had to cut back on when we didn't have that funding, investments we weren't able to make.
Aaron, I'd like your assessment here. What is the state of mental health support in Allegheny County right now?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are struggling. There's a number of issues related to this. Obviously, the issues discussed as we come out of pandemic, isolation, reduction in stigma, which is a good thing. More people willing to come forward with mental health needs. But there is also a huge crisis in the staffing side, as folks are well aware. We're trying to do a bunch of stuff around that. We've got a big behavioral health fellows program that we're launching that will help bring staff back into the field, tuition reimbursement and loan repayment and so on. But staffing is a big issue. And so even when we have the money, for example, on the Medicaid side, we can't spend it all down because our providers don't have the staff to serve people. And so staffing is the major thing we're working on. And, salary and tuition reimbursement, I think, will help with that.
When will that be launched?
We're launching right now, in the next couple of days, if not, some of it might already be available. So we can get a link to your listeners so that folks can be made aware.
And we'll put that link in our website post. Aaron, I wanted to talk to you. You mentioned stigma, people sort of overcoming that stigma. Obviously, a very good thing for their own mental health improvement, but that means more people needing services. So has that impacted you and providers as well, maybe additional seekers of care?
Yes. And there's been, with the public health emergency, there's been more ability for people to access the kind of insurance coverage that would give them care. So yes, we are seeing more people seeking care, and we want to be able to provide it. One of the things that we've been able to do with county dollars, so the county took, County Executive Rich Fitzgerald with council support took ARPA dollars, those are the federal rescue plan dollars, and are investing, letting us invest $14 million in things like additional crisis support. So that's really important for people getting help when most needed, but also funding peer and community-led supports. So for a lot of people, they may not need the formal treatment system. They may benefit more from people in their community, religious organizations, community-based organizations that support people. So we're investing heavily in that now, and we're hoping that state and Medicaid funding will be able to come in and help us to sustain that.
And would you briefly describe the mental health services being a comprehensive community-based approach that you want to take, that you are partnering with others to do this?
Sure. I think we need a broad continuum of supports. You need places where people can get early access to help, whether that's, just talking to a community-based organization and not the formal mental health services like, a psychiatrist and so on. But when people need those services, we want to make sure they're available and that the outpatient system of care is helping people to so that they don't need further supports. We also need help on the high end, right? There are extreme needs that people have and residential facilities that need to support them. We're facing staffing crises there as well. So it really is a continuum.
All right, you mentioned staffing twice now. Do you have enough staff right now? What are your needs, briefly?
Yeah, no, we don't have enough staff. And so it's really in our provider organization. So all of those community-based mental health services that you're aware of, they're trying and they're recruiting and we're working to help them with rate increases that allow them to have salary increases, as well as this behavioral health fellows program that we think can bring and retain a bunch of therapists in the field.
All right. The governor proposed $20 million, I said, to counties for this budget. You said maybe about 10% will come Allegheny County's way, but he also said then up to $60 million by 2027. Some have called this funding, quote, a down payment from the state. What kind of down payment does the county need, considering also those ARPA dollars will go away?
Right. I think it's a good start and we're appreciative of it, but I think we need a lot more. We also need to advocate for Medicaid flexibility so that those dollars could be spent on the things that are really needed, including crisis supports.
And the legislature will now begin the budget negotiations, particularly on this allocation. What will you be looking for as these negotiations go forward?
Yep. We're hopeful that this funding comes through. I'd also love to see more funding in homeless prevention services. That's another real need in community. That funding's been flat for a long time as well.
Aaron Dalton is the director of Allegheny County's Department of Human Services. Aaron, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. City Theater has announced the five plays of its 2023-24 season. Leaders of the arts organization call them a reinvestigation of a familiar story. Here to tell us more is Montez Freeland, co-artistic director at City Theater. Welcome, Montez.
Thank you for having me.
All right, City Theater doesn't usually have themed seasons, but are there maybe shared approaches, commonalities in how you are presenting these five productions?
Yes, we have five exciting shows that are coming up next season. And when we picked the shows, we didn't set out to find a theme in which all the shows fit into. But we looked at them and said, hey, every one of these shows basically reinvestigates a familiar story from the past, from The Wizard of Oz to Hamlet to Pride and Prejudice. And we're also bringing back a story, South Side Stories by Tammy Dixon, which actually will revisit her very famous and well-attended show about 10 years ago and sort of look at the South Side today.
Some of the shows you've just alluded to, Somewhere Over the Border, Miss Bennett, Christmas at Pemberley. You mentioned South Side Stories Revisited, Fat Ham, and Andy Warhol in a Run. What do you mean by a reinvestigation rather than a retelling?
Yes. So reinvestigation means how do you go inside, keep the essence of the story, but then maybe put a fresh face on it, put some fresh culture and put some fresh music into the story as well. And also, what themes resonate with the audience of today? That's something that we're really investigating in at City Theater, is how do we connect with people today with the sensibilities of the world and the state of the world that we're in at the moment.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to see some familiar storylines, familiar characters, maybe from a different point of view and a different setting as well?
Absolutely. Like when you take Fat Ham, for example, Hamlet, typically, you know, in Denmark. but in this case, it's in the backyard cookout of a family home down south. And so just changing the location itself allows for folks to come to the theater and see a new locale that actually speaks to their heritage and their culture. And from there, the story just takes off.
I wanted to ask you, do you think that people, they see these new interpretations, these reinvestigations, do you wonder if that causes your theater goers maybe to go back to, quote, the original material and revisit Hamlet?
We hope so. We hope so, because the playwright also looked at the source material, and that was their inspiration. So we hope that our audience will go back to look and see, how did this playwright take this story and turn it into this masterpiece, this new masterpiece, this new classic? And so we really invite our audiences to go back and see the source material and then come back and see the show again so that you can really compare the two.
You mentioned Fat Ham, Pulitzer Prize winning play coming from Broadway with, dare I say, Ghosts of Hamlet. Yes. You are directing this one.
Yes.
Why did you want this one?
You know, this story resonates with me in many ways. First, the first Shakespeare show I ever did was Hamlet.
Okay.
And I didn't know anything about it. But I was so enamored with the story. I went home every night after performing in it, and I would watch YouTube video after YouTube video of every production ever made. And then also it tells the story of Juicy, who is now our Hamlet. And Juicy is a young, black, queer, pensive boy. Mm-hmm. And I've been those things at times. Maybe not a boy so much anymore. But I can relate to it. You know, he loses his father. I lost my father. He's trying to navigate in a world that maybe sometimes doesn't always give him the best chance. And I've had that experience as well. And a cast of wonderful characters who are complicated. And, well, if you meet my family and friends, you'll know that's the case. But beyond that, it feels universal, yet it is very specific.
Mm-hmm. But the heart of the story stays the same. It's about family, betrayal,
yes,
and even some mental health.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I love the segment that you just had about mental health in Pittsburgh and beyond.
Mm-hmm. So is this... you're sort of talking about your own personal experiences. Has anything like this happened to you before as a director where, I mean, you are just so immersed in it?
You know, that seems to be a theme with some shows that I direct. And, you know, you don't set out looking for it, but sometimes you can start reading a play and you can start seeing yourself in it, or you see your brother in it or your mom and things of that nature. So it allows you to dig into your life and see the comparisons. And that's what we want our audience to do. We want our audience to sit there and go, this story can be for me, even if the people on stage don't look like me. The mm-hmm. themes resonate with my life. Last night at a performance of Native Gardens, there was an audience member who left the theater, and she said, I went through this exact same thing with my neighbors. And I said, oh boy, I would love to be a fly on that wall. But it's universal, and it's the truth.
That kind of feedback is probably wonderful for you.
Absolutely. We love to hear that.
Okay. So why did you decide to kick off this upcoming season with Somewhere Over the Border? So Dorothy is not looking over the rainbow here.
No, she's not. Dorothy is coming from El Salvador and immigrating to America. And so we wanted to open it with a musical, which is something a city theater, we dabble in every couple seasons or so. And we also wanted something that was family friendly, something that folks can bring their family to. It'll be the end of the summer, school starting, you know, you begrudge that time of year, but also you can still continue on that summer feeling by coming to this show with your family, hearing some amazing new music, and just being immersed in a culture that you may or may not know about. So we wanted to kick off our season with a bang, and Somewhere Over the Border is certainly that. And we're so happy to partner with the Pittsburgh CLO to present it locally, and then also with People's Light Theater.
So does your Dorothy from El Salvador have ruby shoes?
Well, I don't know for sure, but we'll have to ask the costume designer about that. If it's up to me, there'll be silver slippers.
Okay, very good. I did want to ask you before we run out of time, have to mention it, Andy Warhol. So how's this production fit into your overall season?
Absolutely. We look at Andy Warhol, and it's someone who everyone knows, a familiar person and pop icon and pop culture icon, rather. And so this is a reimagining of an instance of him going to Iran where he was just supposed to go take pictures of the Shah's wife. And all of a sudden, Andy finds himself in a perilous situation in a hotel room with a man who is there to do some things. but we find that they have more commonalities than differences, which is, once again, what we hope our audiences understand about each other as well.
Mm-hmm. Montez, about 90 seconds left.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like you're excited about the whole season.
Yes.
Particularly about Fat Ham. But is there one character, one play, one essence of this season that excites you particularly? How would you sum it up?
One character, one play. I can't pick one because I love them all. But I will say something in our season that really does excite me beyond this is our Young Playwrights Festival. Being able to connect with the youth of Pittsburgh and beyond and to tell their stories. And so while you may not be able to purchase that through our subscription package, which are on sale right now, you can also visit our website to get tickets to the Young Playwrights Festival this fall.
Mm-hmm. So does revisiting some similar themes give comfort to people?
I think it does. I think it does. And right now, comfort is what we need.
Comfort is what we need. And why is theater important about providing that comfort?
Theater is important because it allows us to see the world through fresh eyes and makes us better people. We leave the theater with lessons so that we can take them into the world. They're there in front of our face and we can't ignore it. So let's take those lessons and themes into the world. Let's learn from the cautionary tales and just be better people.
Montez Freeland is the co-artistic director at City Theater, which has unveiled the lineup of productions for their new season, which kicks off September 23rd. Montez, thanks so much for visiting with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's The Confluence. I'm Kevin Gavin. The EPA and Norfolk Southern are testing for dioxins near the site of its train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio. These long-lived chemicals can lead to serious health problems, including cancer. The Allegheny Front's Reed Frazier reports fears over dioxin have many near the site anxious about their long-term health.
From a window in her house, Tamara Fries looks across the street at a line of train cars moving through East Palestine. She was standing in this spot the night of February 3rd. She'd just gotten home from work and watched as a line of Norfolk Southern trains burned a few hundred feet from her house.
Yeah, I was standing here. They have it blocked off, but like now see where like the trains go, and those were like just all completely inflamed when I got home.
She and her husband Nelson were mainly worried about casualties from the derailment. They didn't think about what was in those tank cars. Nelson heard that night they were carrying vinyl flooring. That didn't seem so bad.
And I thought, well, that would make black smoke. You know, vinyl flooring would, you know, burn. I've seen it burn, carpet burn. You know, it gives off black smoke. But
like then
it was vinyl chloride. And then I said, oh, no, that is not good.
To prevent a catastrophic tanker explosion, the vinyl chloride was intentionally burned, producing the infamous black smoke that was seen for miles. The Freezes evacuated. They came back to their house not quite knowing what was in that smoke. Tamara's reaction was to start cleaning up.
All our glasses in our cupboard had film on them. And that's when I was like, okay, yep, I have to wash all our clothes, all our curtains, all our bedding, threw out all our pillows, just started washing every dish we owned.
Like a lot of people in town, they started hearing about a toxic group of chemicals called dioxins. These can be created when chemicals that have chlorine in them, like vinyl chloride, burn. Carla Ng is an environmental engineer at the University of Pittsburgh who says dioxins can have long-term health consequences.
Dioxins are famous for being extremely toxic organic chemicals and also bioaccumulative, which means that when you're exposed to them, they tend to stick around in your body, and then even if the levels in the environment are quite low, they can build up over time.
The reason for this, Ng says, is that dioxins are incredibly durable, so they last a long time. And they prefer fat to water, so they cluster in the fat cells of animals like humans and fish.
So things that are water soluble are really easy to get rid of in your body because you can just urinate them out. That's not the case for these chemicals, and so this means that they can have a lifetime in your body that's much longer, years as opposed to hours or minutes.
Nesta Bordy-Sam is an environmental toxicologist with the University of Pittsburgh. He says the body's typical response to breaking down chemicals from the environment doesn't really work on dioxins.
The general idea for metabolism is to break the compound down so that it will be soluble for excretion. This does not always happen, and they're able to form other products that have a strong binding affinity with DNA.
This can lead to serious health problems. According to the EPA, dioxins can cause cancer, damage the immune system, interfere with hormones, and cause reproductive and developmental problems. All of this is why Tamara Fries has wanted more testing. For weeks, the EPA resisted local pressure to sample soil for dioxins before ordering the company to begin testing. The Pennsylvania DEP will also be doing some soil sampling for dioxins in Beaver County. Fries says for her, it's not about propping up any kind of legal case against Norfolk Southern.
I think it's so we know that our dog can safely go and roll around in the grass and we're not going to contaminate the air with cutting the lawn in the summer. Wanting to know if we can grow tomatoes and be safe to eat them.
The Frieses have been experiencing health problems like a sore throat, inner ear issues, and skin problems. And they're not sure if they'll stay in East Palestine. Nelson Fries says when they report out the results, government agencies shouldn't sugarcoat the long-term effects of the derailment.
Just tell me the truth, you know. I'll make up my mind as long as I got the facts. I can't really decide what I'm going to do until I know for sure what the hell it actually is.
The Frieses are split on whether to accept Norfolk Southern's offer to relocate while cleanup takes place. Tamara wants to leave, but Nelson doesn't want to be away from home for months at a time. So for now, they're staying in East Palestine. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Reed Frazier.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. Next time, we look at a report about the company Norfolk Southern hired to test the air in homes for toxic chemicals after the train derailed in East Palestine, Ohio. And the Cary Blast Furnace was a big part of the Homestead Steelworks for several decades. Now we know who Cary was. If you missed anything from today's show or want to hear past episodes, check us out at wesa.fm/confluence or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Thanks to our team, Emma Furry, Laura Satsui, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.